Well, 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 what a busy 2 weeks. Well, it's actually a busy few months. Tonight, nothing. You get a three Wednesday. Unbelievable. This Saturday, I'll be doing a talk on the Italian anti-fascist movement in between the wars in Australia at the Festa della Liberazione. Now, I know the 25th of April is Anzac Day, and I know you all be going to the dawn ceremony, and I know there's no tickets left for the Collingwood-Essendon game. 95,000 people are turning up. So maybe you'd like to turn up at the Democritus League at 583 High Street in Northcote, or Thornbury, it's on the border there. 583 High Street. Doors open at 1 p.m. Entry by donation. You don't have to spend lots of dollars like you do at the aerial ping pong game, and there'll be music, there'll be a film, there's food, and the Italian Festa of Liberazione is basically a public holiday in Italy when the uprising occurred, which threw out basically the Nazis. The popular uprising occurred, began on the 25th of April 1945, which led to the demise of the fascist regime and the eviction of the Nazis from Italy. So it's a very important day in Italy, but this year Philip has decided to do a Festa della Liberazione. I'll be doing the talk in English, but I'll take questions in English and Italian. So that starts at 1:30 p.m. And as I said before, there are films, food, interesting people. So if you can't get into the football, turn up on Saturday night. That's Saturday night, the 25th of April. Now, don't forget the walking tour on the 1st of May. We'll be doing a walking tour beginning at Chummy Place, looking at significant anarchist sites in the Melbourne CBD. Because I don't think most people realise that May Day, which began in Melbourne in 1892, was a creation of the Melbourne Anarchist Club, Melbourne Anarchist Movement at that particular point in time. And don't forget that on the 1st of May from 12:30 to 5 a.m, I know it's disgusting, we will be doing Talk Back with Attitude. Please stay awake or put on your alarm at 3 o'clock to give us a call so we stay awake. It's a good day. It's a good way to bring in May Day. Now, the satellite is almost upon us. The sacred cows have wandered in. They've been taking Italian lessons because they will be coming to the Festa della Liberazione, which has been organised by Philip at the Democritus League Club at 583 High Street, Thornbury, Northcote. You'll be entry by donation. You haven't got any money. It's fine. So we'll see you on Saturday. Here we go. The satellite is upon us. The good folk from the community radio network are almost ready to blast off.
Evil minds that plot destruction, sorcerer of death's construction, in the fields of bodies burning, as the war machine keeps turning. Death and hatred to mankind, poisoning their brainwashed minds.
Welcome to the Anarchist World This Week, broadcast across Australia on the National Community Radio Satellite. Listen to the Anarchist World This Week, Australia's sacred cow slaughterhouse. Listen to analysis of local, national, international events. Listen to analysis you'll never hear anywhere else.
Welcome to the Anarchist World This Week, broadcast across Australia, courtesy of the Community Radio Network. This program is coming to you from the studios of 3CR in Melbourne. My name's Joseph Toscano. The program is podcast. You can access the podcast at any time at 3cr.org.au. There are hundreds of podcasts you can access. If you're wondering what anarchy is all about, anarchos means without rulers. Not without rules. What gives rulers the ability to determine the lives of billions of people, as we're seeing currently on planet Earth? Inequalities in power and wealth. The greater the inequalities, the greater the issues. So the anarchist struggle is the struggle to devolve power. That's possibly share power through direct democratic means, and the struggle to hold wealth in common and use it for the common good. Something that Australians are beginning to wake up to. Fractured dreams. Fractured dreams. Another survey which highlights the parlous state of parliamentary democracy and the parlous state that many Australians find themselves in 2026. 62% of Australians basically are like little mices or mice on a treadmill. They're losing faith in the parliamentary system, because ultimately a parliamentary democracy, not a society based on direct democracy where the people make the decisions, but a parliamentary democracy is based on the notion that the political representatives actually represent your interests. That's right. Very simple. So here we find ourselves in a state of a fractured dream where many people are saying life was better 50 years ago. And I remember life 50 years ago, and I think it was better. It wasn't as complex. It wasn't as many devices around. You could actually walk down the street without bumping into somebody looking at their screen. But being seriously, the question is, as I've said consistently over the last few weeks, the rise in support for divided nation is basically a cry of despair. And it's a cry of despair because we find ourselves in a situation where we have a miserable, that's right, 28 million people from a population of 8 billion, that's 0.03% of the Earth's population, living on a resource-rich continent. And you don't need a survey to find out that people are increasingly dissatisfied with the situation they find themselves in. And the latest, you know, survey highlights that fractured dreams have become a consistent reality in the lives of a growing number of people in this country. The central problem is that people's inability to live satisfying lives that are secure both financially and generally are laid to rest at the feet of minorities, whether it's immigrants, whether it's people who wear funny hats, whether somebody speaks a different language, and the list goes on and on. And it's interesting to see that we have now reached a stage in this country's history, in 2026, where people are beginning to join the dots about their situation. Because what we've seen in the last 50 years, the last half a century that I've been broadcasting here on Community Radio 3CR, in the last 20 years via the Community Radio Network, what people are seeing, they have been sold a very, very sick little pup. For far too long, as a people, as a nation, we have waiting, we have been waiting patiently, fighting amongst ourselves with the about the crumbs that are brushed off the corporate table in our direction. And every single indicator has highlighted the growing inequality in this country. Now, obviously, the federal government's going to deliver a budget in the next 2 weeks. But the interesting thing about that budget, and this is where I talk about joining the dots, is that there seems to be never enough resources to deal with issues which are central to people's everyday lives. Now, I've been a critic of identity politics for a number of years, because what it has done to a significant degree is not focus on what is the central issue. And the central issue hasn't changed in thousands of years. And that central issue is inequalities in power and wealth. That's right, inequalities in power and wealth. And what we've seen in the last 50 years is a growing inequalities in power and wealth to the extent that the great majority of Australians, over 80%, are treading water. And if they lose their source of income, they are in, there's going to be a lot of issues. So the first thing I'd like to talk about is education, especially post-secondary education in this country. Now, I did receive a free education. I had a Commonwealth Scholarship in 1970 when the Whitlam Labor government was elected in 1972. They made tertiary education free. And I was able to get a Bachelor of Medicine, Bachelor of Surgery, and later on a Doctorate of Medicine from Melbourne University. So I am a beneficiary of free education. But what we saw with the Hawke-Keating axis, we saw the introduction of fees for a tertiary education. Now, this introduction of fees has a profound impact on future, has had a profound impact on generations that have been born since I received a free tertiary education. And the great weight has been placed on the shoulders of children from families that do not have disposable income. They don't have the income to pay those fees up front. And once you receive your piece of paper, and in many cases the pieces of paper which have been handed out today are useless, but once you receive your piece of paper, you are burdened with a debt. So what do you expect a generation that has been burdened with a debt at the beginning of their working lives to feel like? Now, obviously, you specialise in certain areas and you've got special qualifications, you give back to the nation. It's very simple. Then we have the ridiculous situation, which I've spoken consistently about on this program for decades, and obviously nobody in authority listens to the Anarchist World This Week, and why should they? The fact is that housing, residential property, has been turned into a commodity, an investment commodity. And people with a little bit of disposable income have been pushed into buying a second property as an investment vehicle. And we now have a situation where the marketplace is totally, 100% dominated by the private sector, courtesy of state governments intervening in the public housing sector and privatising what is left of the public housing sector. Now, every day you hear politicians, people in authority, commentators talk about the cost of housing. the high cost of rent. And the fact is that high mortgage repayments and high rents mean that there is less money, disposable income, for the economy as a whole. But that's a different story. So here we have people crying out for some solution, apart from corporate welfare to the building sector. And what are the solutions we are told? We need to assist the private sector. We need to use taxpayers' money to assist the private sector. Now, the thing about a public housing sector is the fact that it creates, in a mixed economy, competition between the private and public sector. When you tear down a public institution like public housing, there is no competition and prices escalate. You don't need to be a genius to realise that. So here we have all these fractured dreams. People have dreams, and I understand. We all have dreams. Some of us bad dreams. But we all have dreams. And the dreams are very simple. It's not as if everybody in this country wants to become a billionaire or a millionaire. We're talking about people wanting a secure, stable future, free of the fear of having to work into your old age in order to keep a roof over your head or to educate your kids. Now, obviously, not everybody's in the same boat. And as I keep saying, we're all in a, you can think of Australia as a boat. There's the people manning or woman in the oars, pulling the oars. There's the people pulling the oars. And there's the people on the upper deck sipping champagne. And what we've seen is more and more people now find themselves pulling the oars. And the fractured dreams are based on the fact that the social elevator in this country over the last 50 years, during the privatisation, deregulation, corporatisation, globalised revolution, the fact is that during this period, we have been sold this pup. The private sector does it better than the public sector. So people are beginning to realise. Here we have corporations which only make up about 24% of the taxation revenue. Over 60% of taxation revenue in this country still comes from pay-as-you-earn taxpayers, not the corporate sector. We see billions of dollars being squirreled into the pockets of private players in the early childhood development area, private players in the aged care sector, private players in providing NDIS services. And we wonder why people are not able to access services. The fact is that when you rely on the private sector to provide a service, 50 cents in every dollar of taxpayers' money which goes into that service is nothing more than welfare, corporate welfare. Some of the richest entities in this country. And when people talk about competition, competition doesn't exist when you have various fields of human endeavour, whether it's childcare, whether it's aged care, whether it's food, where a handful of corporations dominate the marketplace. So no wonder an increasing number of Australians are turning to divided nation. But the problem is, the issue isn't our differences. The issue is much more basic. And you know it, I know it, and people are beginning to realise. The issue is that some people, some institutions, have been making merry at the expense of the people in this country. There is no way we should be introducing fees for aged care services. There is no way people leave a tertiary education with a HECS debt. There should be no way. There should be no way that we don't have a significant public housing sector to ensure that people who are unable to buy into the private sector have a roof over their heads. No way. It's just extraordinary the situation we find ourselves in. And because we've been nice, we've been pleasant, we've doffed our cap. No wonder there are these advertisements everywhere about not taking out on the staff, you know, various institutions, to treat staff with respect. And I understand that, because they're just workers like everybody else. But the fact is, the very people who are maximising their profits at the expense of the consumer, the very people who are ripping this country blind, now set the parliamentary agenda. I cannot believe the debate around a pathetic 25% gas super tax, which would rake in about $18 billion. It reminds you of the debate regarding people with $3 million in their superannuation account and the fact they'll have to pay a little bit more tax on their profits. I think it involved 18,000 Australians in compared to 28 million. It's just extraordinary. And why do we find ourselves in this situation? Because power no longer lies in the corridors of Parliament. It no longer lies in the corridors of Parliament. For far too long, we have seen our parliamentary representatives more frightened of that 1% that own the means of production, distribution, exchange and communication than the very people who elect them to office. Crunch time is coming. And it is coming with the introduction of artificial intelligence. It is coming when we see the middle classes, those with no disposable income who can pay all their bills, suddenly find themselves on the scrap heap and having to service loans that can no longer be serviced unless two people in a unit, a family unit, are working full time. So, I'm pleased people are beginning to join the dots. The problem isn't, as Divided Nation tells us and as the defunct Liberal Party tells us, the problem isn't the migrant, the person with a different religion, the person who speaks a different language, the person who wears a funny hat. The problem is that power and wealth lies in fewer and fewer and fewer hands, and we have governments, irrespective of their political composition, we have governments that are nothing more than apologists for the 1% that own the means of production, distribution, exchange and communication. Again, I leave the problem with you. That's right. Because it's everybody's problem. It's everybody's problem. But I can see a light on the horizon, because more and more Australians are beginning to understand that the path on which the light is shining of Divided Nation is nothing more than a pathetic cul-de-sac which reinforces the divisions and the inequalities which exist in this country. Divisions and inequalities which should never have been allowed to develop. You listen to The Anarchist World This Week, broadcast across Australia by the Community Radio Network. This program is streaming live on 3cr.org.au. The program is podcast. You can access the podcast by going to 3cr.org.au. My name is Joseph Toscano. You can go to the Facebook page, Joseph Toscano. You can go to the webpage, Public Interest Before Corporate Interest, or anarchistmedia.org. You can YouTube channels, Public Interest Before Corporate Interest, josephtoscano.com, which is a historical channel which looks at the radical past in Australia and its significance to the present. So there's lots of things we can do. Now, I'd just like to remind people about the 25th of April. That's this Saturday, Anzac Day. Now, I've been speaking about this for over a quarter of a century. There are many, many myths surrounding Anzac Day. I have no issues with people remembering those who've been killed in wars, in the majority of cases, for no good reason. We need a day to remember the atrocities that war produces. Not just in terms of the civilian casualties, but in terms of the impact it has on the men and women involved in creating those disasters. But I really am at a loss to explain how the stories regarding World War I have been turned into pro-military and pro-nationalist events. Now, World War I, and I'm happy to debate this with anybody, World War I was a dirty little trade war fought by workers at either end of a bayonet. When war was declared on the 1st of August 1914, the Prime Minister jumped up and said they would defend the British Empire to the last man and the last shilling. And if you look at pictures of recruitment centres around the country, there was almost universal support for the war. And we're told that this country earned its badge of honour through a blood sacrifice. Now, there are 5 million people living in Australia at that period in 1914. 5 million. Of that 5 million, 420,000 men volunteered to fight in the war to end all wars. 420,000. Obviously, the economic situation was dire. People wanted to do something a bit different. And people volunteered. But within 12 months, the rate of volunteering had disappeared. As we saw the disasters on the Dardanelles, Anzac Cove, people didn't want to volunteer. I was looking at a meeting at Dandenong Town Hall, which was held in 1915, a pro-war meeting. It turned into an anti-war debate. And nobody volunteered of the 5,000 people that had turned up to join the forces in Europe. See, we're told that World War I, and I'm not talking about World War II, that's a different story, but World War I was a war for democracy and liberty and freedom. And it was people fought to protect the country. World War I, if you look at all the monuments, was a war for God, King and country. But what happened during World War I is a really exciting part of Australian history, which is hardly ever mentioned. A growing anti-conscription struggle. The Labor Prime Minister, Billy Hughes, went off to Mother England in January 1916, and when he returned 6 months later in June 1916, he was under pressure to put more men into the battle onto the European killing fields. And there was strong resistance amongst Australians who had not volunteered, and the families and friends of people who had volunteered, who found themselves reading a telegram that their father, their brother, their nephew, their son was missing in action or had died. Because of those 420,000 volunteers, 62,000 died on the European killing fields, more than have died in wars, in every single war Australia has been involved in since World War I. Of the 60, of those that survived, another 60,000 died of their war wounds within 10 years of returning to this country. And the government, the Prime Minister, under pressure to introduce conscription, as the English did in June 1916, to replenish the millions of men who had been mowed down on the European killing fields. 8,000 Australians died in one battle on the Somme, I think it was 1917. Extraordinary. So, the industrial workers of the world, the much maligned IWW, were at the forefront of resistance to war, resistance to conscription. By 1916, we had an unusual coalition had developed against the idea of introducing conscription into this country. And a coalition consisted of radicals like the industrial workers of the world, a strong women's movement in Melbourne led by Vida Goldstein, well known to activists, and the Roman Catholic Church led by Archbishop Mannix, because let's not forget the failed Easter Rebellion in Ireland in 1916 and the execution of most of the leaders of the Easter Rebellion. So we had these three, and an increasing number of trade unionists, over 70%, who were opposed to the idea of being involved in the war in the first place because of increasing inflation, increasing prices in the country. So Billy Hughes held a plebiscite, not a referendum, but a plebiscite, in December 1916, and he was so convinced that the plebiscite would work, would be carried by the Australian people, that he began mustering, enlisting, forcing men to enlist in the Australian Armed Forces. Now, to his horror, the plebiscite failed. This coalition of women activists, socialists, industrial workers of the world, trade unionists, and the Catholic Church saw the defeat of the plebiscite. Once again, Billy Hughes, knowing that he would be expelled from the Labor Party and would lose the prime ministership, crossed the floor for one-third of the members of the Australian Labor Party and formed the National Labor Party and joined the Nationalists, joined the opposition. And once again in December, the first plebiscite, sorry, was in October 1916, the second one was in December 1917. Once again, the plebiscite failed with an increasing majority of people. So what is the essence of this? The essence is that if conscription had been introduced in this country in World War I, there were 600,000 eligible men who could have been conscripted from that population of 5 million. And if they'd been sent overseas, they would have joined the thousands of Australians who were slaughtered and maimed and injured on the European killing fields for the glory of God, King and country. Not freedom, not democracy, not defence of the country. They were instrumental in saving the lives of thousands, if not tens of thousands of young Australian men. And is there one mention during the Anzac Day ceremonies? Is there one tear shed for those that were jailed because of their anti-conscription activities? People like Tom Barker, the editor of Direct Action for the Industrial Workers of the World, who was jailed for 12 months for putting out a leaflet, a poster which encapsulated the essence of what was happening. It said, "To arms, capitalists, landlords, parsons, politicians, newspaper editors, your country needs you in the trenches. Workers, follow your masters." The fact that the Industrial Works of the World was banned, their members jailed for being part of an anti-conscription struggle. You can write and rewrite history as much as you like. But a known history cannot be unknown. And that's the reason on the 25th of April, or as the 25th of April approaches, I personally talk about the importance of the anti-conscription struggle in this country during World War I as an important indicator of what we as a people can do. The known cannot be unknown. Irrespective of how many lies, how history is manipulated, how history is rewritten to suit those who continue, that's right, who continue to use Anzac Day as a way of actually supporting militarism, supporting war, not remembering the dead. You're listening to The Anarchist World This Week, broadcast across Australia via the Community Radio Network. This program is streaming live on 3cr.org.au. Let's move on. Now, this Wednesday, that's the 25th... No, sorry, I'm going mad. This Saturday, the 25th of April, I've been invited by FILEF, which is an Italian reformist organisation, to do a presentation at the Italian Festa Liberazione. Now, the 25th of April isn't just sacred to Australians. It's also sacred to Italians. And Anzac Day is a public holiday in this country, unless it falls in a weekend. And the 25th of April is also a public holiday in Italy, where people celebrate the Festa della Liberazione. On the 25th of April 1945, combined partisan groups who'd been resisting the Nazi occupation and the fascist dictatorship called for a general uprising, which initially led to Milan and Turin being wrested from the hands of the fascists, the Nazis, and led to the end of World War II in a few months' time. So they celebrate that day. They call it the Festival of Liberation. And this year, after you've gone to your Anzac Day ceremony in the morning, don't waste your time buying a ticket, although I've been told there's none available, for the Collingwood-Essendon Anzac Day football game, which 95,000 Australians will be attending here in Melbourne. Don't waste your time getting a scalp ticket. Why don't you come along to the Festa of Liberazione here in Melbourne, which has been organised by FILEF? It'll be held at the Democritus League Hall or building at 5... Oh, I've got to get this right, Joe. 583 High Street, Thornbury. 583 High Street, Thornbury. Celebrations will start at 1 p.m. Doors open at 1 p.m. Entry, unlike the aerial ping pong game down at the MCG, which 95,000 people have spent millions of dollars entering, entry is by donation. If you don't have any money, you're still welcome. Doors open at 1 p.m. 583 High Street in Thornbury. At the Democritus League Centre, I'll be doing a talk at 1:30 p.m. or around 1:30 p.m. on the Italian anti-fascist resistance in between the wars in Australia by both Italian anarchists, anti-fascists, socialists and communists. So I'll be doing a lecture about that because, as I said, the known cannot be unknown. But if you don't know it, it remains unknown. And I'll also be talking about the Italians that were interned in Australia during World War II and what actually happens at Murchison every year. So please come along, enjoy the festa. There will be a food. I understand there's a film, food, even dancing, music, who knows. So come along this Saturday, the 25th of April. Look it up, go to the Falefel, F-I-L-E-F, Melbourne webpage, and they'll tell you all about it. Let's move on. Political inertia. Well, you see, there's this inertia in our country. There seems to be this inability to push forward reform. And that inability to a significant degree is based on the fact that there is very little public agitation, apart from people opening their mouths like I do, to initiate reform. And when there are people who take the effort and make the effort and make the sacrifices to highlight what is happening, they're ostracised, they're marginalised, they're called professional demonstrators. The fact is, we can no longer work up the right channels. There's no point being a social or an asocial media warrior, wasting your time arguing with idiots. No point. Political inertia is due to a significant degree to people relying on elections to solve their problems. But the problem with elections is you are not making decisions about policy, you are electing representatives. You can do what they like once they're elected. They can even change, as we saw with the old stupid Barnaby boy, you know, you can even change your political allegiances, although you have been elected as another from another political party. So there is an inertia. And I've noticed since the 90s that the amount of activity we see on the streets, the amount of, has almost diminished to nothing, especially on issues surrounding economic inequality. It's as if it doesn't exist. It's as if, you know, if you vote in a political party at the next election, everything's going to be resolved. And the fact is, it's not going to be resolved, as we said at the beginning when we talked about fractured dreams. It cannot be resolved until the wealth that is created in this country is not siphoned on into the pockets of local and overseas investors. And that's the reality. You can't solve the aged care problems or the early childhood development problems or the fact there's not enough to go around or the fact that the unemployment benefits is below the poverty line. You can't solve that problem if a government continues to be timid. It's an ability to pass legislation. And that political inertia to a significant degree is due to the lack of political activity on the streets. And everybody talks about the Whitlam-led Labor government and the 282 pieces of legislation they passed in 4 years, including the introduction of a universal healthcare system, which was called Medibank, no-fault divorce, licences for community radio stations like the one I'm talking from and the one you're listening to break the Murdoch monopoly on the dissemination of ideas. But the fact is, the Labor Party was pushed in that direction by an engaged public that wanted radical reform after 25 years of Liberal Country Party domination. And we don't have that pressure being placed on political parties today. And even those people who misguidedly think that the divided nation are the new messiahs soon realise that they have nothing to offer that is different from the agendas which are pursued by the other political parties. Now, I don't know if you know this. It's a little bit of a joke, but it's not a joke. That the socialist left, you like that? It's a nice term. The socialist left faction is in charge of the Alternative Liberal Party in Victoria. That's the Australian Labor Party government. And although the socialist left faction has done a few good things in terms of identity politics, in terms of signing a treaty, the fact is, when it comes to major economic issues, it has been a total, total failure. Especially in its public housing policies, where it has done everything it can to privatise the public housing sector, where it has wasted billions, over $27 billion, digging a bloody hole. Digging a hole. Instead of investing that money in public housing, even creating a publicly owned construction company to build that public housing, or spot purchasing properties around the state. What has the socialist left faction done of the Alternative Liberal Party? It has put its faith in the private sector. It has washed its hands of its responsibility to its citizens to provide them with the basic necessities of life. Just extraordinary, isn't it? Just extraordinary. So that if that's the best, the very best, the socialist left faction of the Alternative Liberal Party in Victoria can do, I can understand why people are angry. It's extraordinary how once governments achieve office, they're not willing to break the bonds with the 1% that own the means of production, distribution, exchange and communication. Let's move on. The Liberal Party. What a pathetic group of rabid dogs. What a pathetic group. I'm sure even Bob Menzies would have torn up his membership card of today's Liberal Party. You shouldn't call it the Liberal Party, you should call it the Institute of Private Affairs Party. Because what has happened is almost every branch is now dominated by people who continue to pursue a pro-corporate agenda, who continue to sing the praises of deregulation and privatisation and globalisation. I mean, I can't even mention the name of the Liberal Party leader now, the federal leader. I just call him Dutton's right-hand man, because him and Dutton were the ones who created that policy which saw the Liberal Party be almost consigned to the garbage bin of history. And when I see that man get up and say, we don't need a gas super profits tax, what we need is to destroy what's left of the trade union movement, what we need is to remove all those regulations which protect people, what a pathetic bunch of losers. They deserve to be overtaken by a divided nation. They deserve the situation they find themselves in. They couldn't even keep their first woman opposition leader in office because they were hungry, hungry to continue to pursue the same inane, stupid, ignorant policy trail which was pursued by the Dutton-led Liberal Party. At least the National Party, under its new leader, has moved away from the deregulation, privatisation, globalisation, corporatisation script, which is tattooed on the forehead of Liberal Party politicians in federal and state parliament. And those of you who think that the alternative Liberal Party in Victoria is bad, just wait till you see what the new Liberal Party is capable of doing in the state of Victoria. So, bye-bye. At least one thing I can enjoy in my, how shall I put it, my later years is the demise of one of the most retrogressive organisations this country has seen. In many regards, they make the Stanley Bruce government, which was kicked out of office just before the Depression, look like a reformist government. What an extraordinary bunch of losers with no policies, no ideas, you know, welded to a bygone age. The world has moved on. You've moved on. I've moved on. They will never be moved on. They are the dinosaurs of this country's political mixture. Let's move on. Hail USA. Hail USA. We can't have a program without talking about the USA. Look, I'm not going to waste your time talking about the devastation in the Middle East, courtesy of the fascist Israeli government and the buffoon-led United States of America. But I am interested in the concept that they are judge, jury and executioner. And what is the definition of a rogue state? Well, a rogue state is a state which believes it is judge, jury and executioner. And what am I talking about? Now, I know it's just a minor issue as far as the media is concerned, but here we have the United States government using all the power at its disposal to sink speedboats. Over 180 people have been killed over the last 6 months by the United States Air Force and Navy because we are told they are drug runners. Now, I'm sure they could actually capture those boats and we could see whether they're drug runners. Here we have a little boat speeding across the waves and bang, gone. Judge, jury and executioner. Rogue state. Well, at least the people of this country are beginning to wake up to the buffoon in Washington and his inability to actually govern. One last thing to all our Queensland listeners. From the river to the sea and globalise the infatata has been banned in Queensland. 2 years jail. People just arrested at protests a few days ago. From the river to the sea, Palestine will be free. Banned. It's interesting. We have an implied right of political communication, but unfortunately that implied right only rests during election periods. So let's see what happens to these court cases as they wind their way to the High Court. I mean, the fact is that Australia, as I keep saying, has less protection for the individual from the arbitrary exercise of state power than any other Western parliamentary democracy on the planet, including England, which doesn't even have a constitution. You've been listening to the Anarchist World This Week, broadcast across Australia via the Community Radio Network. This program has been streaming live via the Community Radio Network, as I said before. The program is a podcast. You can access the podcast by going to 3cr.org.au. You can leave messages on 0439 395 489. 0439 395 489. I do answer letters. I know it's unbelievable, but you can write to me at Post Office Box 20, Parkville 3052. YouTube channels, Public Interest Before Corporate Interests, over 350 presentations on various issues. Other YouTube channel, it's a Radical History channel, josephtoscano.nam. You can go onto my Facebook page, Joseph Toscano, to see what's going on. If you're interested in putting public interest, that's the interest of the many, before corporate interest, the interest of the few, I encourage you to look at the Public Interest Before Corporate Interest website, PIBCI.net. You can join online. That's right, online. There's many things going on around the country. Keep listening to the Anarchist World This Week. Keep listening to other reformist radical programs. Keep getting involved. Most importantly of all, try to organise something in your part of the world to ensure that the central questions of our time, equality and wealth, are addressed by this nation. As I said before, the Whitlam Labor government had a radical agenda because of the large number of people who are demanding change on the streets. Thank you once again for listening to the Anarchist World This Week on your local community radio station, courtesy of the Community Radio Network.
Evil minds that plot destruction, sorcerer of death's construction. In the fields of bodies burning, as the war machine keeps turning. Death and hatred to mankind, poisoning their brainwashed mind.
Welcome to the Anarchist World This Week, broadcast across Australia on the National Community Radio Satellite. Listen to the Anarchist World This Week, Australia's sacred cow slaughterhouse. Listen to analysis of local, national, international events. Listen to analysis you'll never hear anywhere else.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast. If you found it valuable, please consider donating or subscribing to support independent community radio. To find out more, go to 3cr.org.au.